Be advised, the Digital Graveyard contains the following: adult language, bad advice, and spoilers. There will be no further warnings. Consider yourself disclaimed.
Now more flavor blasted than ever, it's the Digital Graveyard. I am your one half of your host, Eric Graves, and if you follow the clues on your Digital Graveyard placemats, you may be able to find my co-host,
Bobby Digital here. My co-host Eric said, we're just going to say co-host over again, aren't we?
Co-host and co-host.
Co-host, yeah. And co-host, yeah.
We're co-equal co-hosts, yes.
Like he said, this is the Digital Graveyard, a place where we talk about all things nerdy in video games, comics, and TV. Now, today we are recording on February 20th?
20th, yep.
Yep. It's been a couple weeks. With the cold and just general busyness,
there's been so much going on.
Like, it's been too much.
Don't think that we haven't noticed, listeners, all 70 of you.
Especially our Texas listeners.
Especially our listeners in Texas. the biggest demographic of listeners. We're very sorry. But they're not going to be able to listen to this until power comes back on. We don't even mention them. we're very sorry about Ted Cruz's dog. But in any case, this is the Digital Graveyard. The benefit of taking a week off, though, is that we have a lot more to talk about. We have a lot more to get into. But we always start the show with just what me and my co-host have been... I said it again. what me and my partner have been just watching or reading or checking out over the last couple of weeks. We call it our pleasantries. I've got a few things to share this time.
Totally. But why don't you start? Because you seem really amped about them.
Sure. Well, a lot of new stuff to Disney Plus. I know you checked out the new episode of WandaVision, right?
Of course.
So good. So the big reveal of this one is that it is in fact something magical that is behind the episode so far, and it is it's Agatha Harkness. Is that correct? Catherine Hahn. Yeah. Is her character the whole time has been a minor Marvel character who is a witch.
Super minor. I looked her up thinking like, okay,
so
she's magic.
I had never heard of her before. Right. I had to look her up. But the good news is that, a lot of people are upset because a lot of people were really hoping it's Mephisto. The good news is Agatha Harkness does have some ties to Mephisto. So I'm wondering, based on this, and we still have some episodes to go before the season is over, I'm really wondering, because as we've mentioned before, this is sort of the starting point for what will be Phase 4, mm-hmm. Do you think they might be building up to... Because it's obvious, it's magic. They're not even hiding that fact right now. They're like, this is magic. Do you think that the Thanos of Phase 4 will be Mephisto or Blackheart or a similar magic character?
Like, it has to be someone who's big enough that he can handle, like, multiple people.
Yeah.
Maybe Dormammu will come back in a bigger way.
Dormammu! That's a good one. Oh, yeah. I would love to see more Dormammu. I mean, that would make sense, too, because we still haven't really seen the descent into villainy of Baron Mordo, you know, played by, I can never pronounce his name, he did such a good job in Doctor Strange. I crave seeing those two characters more.
Yeah.
Well, and that's a possibility, yeah.
Well, and Dormammu, in Doctor Strange, we didn't really get much of him. He was really just, like, a flaming monster, like, in the distance with a vague face shape.
I don't want to draw the comparison, but I do feel a little like Dormammu in Doctor Strange was like Galactus in Fantastic Four 2.
Not nearly as bad.
Not nearly as bad. I will never say it's as bad. But I do feel like it was just kind of like, we need a big scary monster for the end, so here you go. Didn't have anything else to do in the movie. And like I said, Baron Mordo was like, I get that they're trying to make him nicer. They're trying to locify, which is an adjective I'm trying to coin when you take a villain and try and give him an undeserved redemption arc to make him more likable,
like Maleficent,
exactly like Maleficent. You're locifying the villain, because Baron Mordo was way too likable by the end of Doctor Strange. He's not a good dude. But I would like to see more of. Well, I'd just like to see more Doctor Strange anyway, because it isn't the magic side of Marvel has not really been addressed too much yet.
Yeah.
But that's my point about the WandaVision episode, is that it's like, nope, they're not trying to make anything up. This is another witch. This is magic. Wanda's powers are magic, and here they are.
Yeah.
So what comes next, I think, will sort of set that tone. And I wouldn't be surprised if we found out it was Mephisto or Blackheart. My question for you, Bobby Digital, is do you think, because everybody's been talking about it, who do you think they'll cast as Mephisto and or Blackheart? There was a rumor that Evan Peters was not actually Quicksilver and instead Mephisto, but I think he'd be a really good Blackheart, honestly.
Yeah.
But let's ignore that for a second, just somebody who hasn't been in the series yet. Obviously, I think, what was it, like, David Carradine is dead, so I think he played Mephisto in Ghost Rider. If you can look that up for me, I would appreciate that.
Yeah, David Carradine?
Okay. I think I might be wrong about that, but I don't remember who played Mephisto in Ghost Rider. I do know, I can't remember his name, but it's the guy from American Horror Story Hotel who played Blackheart.
Wes Bentley played him.
Wes Bentley played Wes Bentley played Blackheart.
Yeah, he played Blackheart. Yeah.
I, like, they brought back Alfred Molina to play Doc Ock. I would honestly be okay with Wes Bentley playing Blackheart again.
Yeah.
Because he deserves to do that, to give another try.
Yeah, and frankly, it says that Peter Fonda was...
Peter Fonda! That makes a ton of... Okay, that, yeah. No, I think Peter Fonda's still alive, isn't he? Maybe.
I'm not seeing, like... Yeah, no, he's still alive. I don't think he's acting much anymore, though.
I think you could bring them... Well, neither was Robert Redford, and they still brought him back for Captain America Winter Soldier.
True.
Like, I think you could bring both of those guys back and give them a fair shake.
And Nicolas Cage come... No.
No. I know he wants to, but I think we do need a new Johnny Blaze.
Yeah.
Or even a new Ghost Rider. And we've mentioned Danny Ketch on the show before. I would love to see a Danny Ketch.
I say do Danny or Robbie. Either
Charlie
way.
Hunnam is the logical choice for the next Ghost Rider. But I think you could find any number of young actors in Hollywood who would be perfect Ghost Riders. Right. Quite frankly, I'm more concerned about the villain.
True.
But no. So that's the thing about WandaVision. The other thing I definitely wanted to talk about.
Okay, but before we get on to that, my one thing about WandaVision is they straight up confirmed, like, the people caught in this bubble, they're going to become mutants.
Yeah.
Like with the way that...
So that's confirmed.
Well, more or less. Yeah. I mean, with the way Monica...
Exposure to this...
Hex thing, yeah.
Could this... Okay, because Monica is Captain Marvel 2, right? Is that her?
Well, yeah. Like,
The one from Secret Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is... Perfect casting, don't get me wrong. She's one of the most underrated characters in Marvel because nobody really liked her at the time, which is a shame because she's very distinctly different from both the original Captain Marvel and Ms. Marvel, who is the current Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And the current Ms. Marvel, who is an Inhuman, who is completely unrelated to any of that.
Right.
But I have absolutely no idea how the second Captain Marvel got her superpowers. So they can pretty much come up with whatever story they want, and it looks like they're actually doing that and making a really good story, but... They're still being true to aspects of the character. Like, you can see that her sword, like, space suit looks a lot like the...
Like her OG
her
costume.
Version of the costume.
Yeah. One of her costumes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They also tease a few episodes back, like, on her mom's plaque.
Yeah.
It said, like, Photon, which is one of her codenames.
Oh,
like,
okay.
After she was done being Captain Marvel, she went by Spectrum and Photon.
So they could just call her that, and then... which I think would be fine, because the movies have a way of defining what the comics would write the characters into. And a resurgence of the second Captain Marvel as... The resurgence of Photon, I think it'd be fine.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be totally fine with that. She's doing such a great job. She's doing such a great job.
I love her.
So, who do you think... Like, so if you think the people in this town are, like, going to be the origin of the X gene, which would be an interesting way to go about it, what do you think Kat Dennings... character is going to...
Oh, yeah, she'd have to get powers.
you said it, not me.
Oh, jeez. She becomes Marrow.
Because I... Ah, fuck you. Because I love Kat Dennings, and I will unapologetically say that. And Kat Dennings, if you want to leave Josh Groban and get with a hero, you know where I'm at. You don't know where I'm at, but I mean, I'm on Facebook. You can find me.
Yeah.
But
you're also part of a franchise that has heroes, so...
Yeah. Like, oh man, that is an interesting theory that I haven't really given much thought to. So I'll get back to you if we remember to talk about it next week.
Yeah.
Because that'd be really interesting. What about Deborah Jo Rupp and her husband, who's the actor's name I can't remember in the show? Would they become like heroes or villains? Would God.
I think most of the people in there would be very pissed.
Yeah.
Like, coming out of
it. I think so, too.
Like, they will be screwed up.
Well, you gotta keep in mind, so, like, S.W.O.R.D. is, like, currently the placeholder for S.H.I.E.L.D. in this universe, now that S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't really exist.
Right, S.H.I.E.L.D.
right?
was completely dissolved.
And yeah. the last episode also kind of revealed that the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not an altruistic good guy like Nick Fury. And Nick Fury is not even, like, an altruistic dude to begin with. Like, Nick Fury was a problematic person. This guy seems worse. This guy seems more like we need to get the Vision because he's the ultimate weapon right now. Now that there's no Ultron, now there's no Infinity Stones, the Vision is arguably the most dangerous single object on the planet.
Yeah, totally.
So his logic is sound, but he also, it's ignoring the fact that the Vision is also a sentient thing with his own thoughts and feelings and such. So I have a feeling that the relationship between S.W.O.R.D. and the superhero existence in going forward in the Marvel Universe will come into play as well.
Yeah.
Maybe S.W.O.R.D. will be, and I think, because, correct me if I'm wrong, S.W.O.R.D. is also somewhat responsible for the creation of the Sentinels, or something like this, something that affected Marvel. It's Bolivar Trask who invented them. We all know that.
Right.
Everybody knows that part. I was reading something about, like, some, like, there's been some connection between that.
I think nowadays they employ Sentinels.
Yeah.
Like, they use them.
Yeah.
Less so that they created them. They just use them now as a weapon.
It wouldn't be off base for the MCU to just say, S.W.O.R.D. are the current, like, now that Tony Stark is dead, now that the Avengers are, for all they know, defunct, S.W.O.R.D. is now the government agency responsible to control the world from world-ending things. And just as Tony Stark found out in Avengers 2 with Ultron, that is actually a very morally problematic and gray area. And I think that, so, like, much like the X-Men comics, because, again, the villains in the X-Men comics were the U.S. government. They were just trying to safely understand a way these new people who have the power to level city blocks.
Yeah.
Like, and that is the duality of the X-Men. I have this suspicion that that's where they're heading to. It makes sense, right? Like, this somewhat morally problematic military agency building these sentinels to deal with superpowered individuals. But what you're saying about this zone that creates the X gene, like, obviously they would want to contain and control that.
Yeah, like, totally. Well, and then, like, because I remember way back with Infinity War and Endgame, how the big theory was, like, oh, all the people who were blipped is what they ended up calling it. all the people who were blipped, that they would end up being the X-Gene mutants. And it's like, and that would have made sense.
We still don't know, the only person who's developed superpowers so far from the WandaVision, the Westfield containment zone, has been someone who was also blipped. So maybe it's a combination of these two things. Maybe it is the sort of half-life of the Infinity Stones. Because Wanda got her powers from an Infinity Stone. Mm-hmm. So did Vision. They're both in the same area. And clearly the whole Agnes Hargreaves thing is going to have relevance as well.
Yeah.
I just remember back when WandaVision debuted and the first two episodes told you absolutely nothing and people were already writing it off as, like, just not a good show, and I'm like, oh my god, guys.
Oh my god, stick with it.
Like, the value of commitment.
Well, seriously, you gotta think of WandaVision and all these shows, really, as, like, 8-plus-hour movies.
Yeah.
Like, they
are. It really is two incredibly long movies, just back-to-back. Like, the first half of WandaVision, now we're in the second half of WandaVision. And it's something that's never been done in television before because we've never really had the means to tell this story before. And like I've addressed in the last few episodes, it's not just what we're seeing on the screen, it's what we're talking about in the casting and the writing and these announcements that they have. Like, there's never been an entertainment medium that's been able to utilize this. Mm-hmm. So it'll be really interesting going forward with that.
Well, and then also in my head, like, I put on the tinfoil hat, like, right after the last episode, but like, you know that scene where Monica and Wanda are, like, kind of facing off?
Yeah.
Right there.
I do.
And it just, like, it focused on, like, all the neighbors, and, like, there's just this mailman. Like, they focus on him a lot.
It's always really awkward, weird. Like, I did, you posted something to Facebook, and I do, I think there's something there. I do think, like, it's the same thing that we talk about when we bring up the two people that have always been in the commercials so far. Mm-hmm. Like, there's gotta be something about these people, right? Like, they've just spent a little too much time focusing on that mailman in completely inconspicuous, seemingly inconsequential ways. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm saying he's Senor Magico, who is a street-level magician. Who, like, works with, like, Luke Cage and Iron Fist. Like, I say that's who he is.
That'd be... I would be so down... Or maybe, like, when you posted the picture, like, the mailman will make sense, but Senor Magico looks just a lot like their neighbor who was trying to cut through the wall in that one episode.
Yeah.
Like, and if you say, like, these people are being, like, infused with possibly the X-Gene, but it could just be possibly be any superpowers, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so you may be onto something. They, like... What is he too obscure? They just pulled up Agatha Hargreaves. Like, of course he's not too obscure. No. They, anyone's fair game at this point.
But then, like, part of me...
Devil also... Dinosaur could show up tomorrow and I wouldn't be surprised.
Like... Yeah, but part of me was also so... Because, like, I know part of Agatha Hargreaves', like, M.O. is that she always wants to build, like, a witch coven of her own. So maybe she had that going on in Westview. And then... Wanda came in and kind of muddied that.
Just Catherine Hahn's Agatha Hargreaves. You want to know because this is who I thought she was when she first started like revealing that she was working against Wanda and Vision. But now I feel like a little more confident that they may introduce this into Thor: Love and Thunder, the sorceress or the enchantress.
Yeah.
Enchantress. Sorceress is somebody else.
But they gotta introduce characters like Cleo and stuff. Who's a Doctor Strange character?
No. And we've talked about the next Doctor Strange movie a lot because, again, because of this weird new media where we can predict what the movie is gonna do based on announcements. We know that the multiverse is gonna be a thing in Spider-Man, and we know that the title of Doctor Strange's next movie is Doctor Strange and the Sentinels of the Multiverse or whatever. Yeah. Like so.
Multiversal madness.
So we know that, like, this is going to be relevant. The fact that we now have a character from an entirely separate universe in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is also, I think, going to lead to that. It makes it seem like these two movies, Spider-Man 3 and Doctor Strange 2, are going to be very, very important. So I just feel like... I don't know what I'm getting at here. I feel like we have something to look forward to with these two movies specifically. And I feel like WandaVision and I would bet money on Captain Falcon and Winter Soldier. I keep calling him Captain Falcon. They're just calling him Falcon in the movies, but come on.
But Captain Falcon is a good name.
That's a good name, man.
He's one of the best characters in Smash. No. Well, and then Loki's dealing with the multiverse as well.
That's right. They're also doing a Loki show.
Yeah.
So I just feel like they're going to lean in on this magic and the multiverse. Two things that they really did not deal with in the first full... three phases of Marvel. Yeah. I mean, we of course, Doctor Strange is the thing. They didn't spend any time worrying about Doctor Strange.
No.
these themes are setting up what they're planning on next. And which is why I kind of bolsters my theory right now that I think Mephisto is going to be the next Thanos because who else is on par with Thanos?
Yeah,
like a world-breaking villain. You got Mephisto, and there's so he's the villain of so many different characters too.
Well, plus like Mephisto's important to like Spider-Man's lore as well.
Doctor Strange,
as well as Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch and all.
Pretty much
everyone who's still around.
I dare say that Scarlet Witch probably more than anyone. Like if you had to pick a single Scarlet Witch villain, not that she has that many single books of her own. But, I mean, there's Magneto, her father, and then there's Mephisto, her kind of mentor, sort of, in a sense, like, in a weird way.
As far as we know. We didn't read Scarlet.
Yeah, he's definitely more tied into magic, who is also, I guess technically, has also been in a movie, but we don't know what they're going to do with the new
movies. He loves to just fuck around with anyone.
Oh, no, yeah. And if you're going to try and make, again, to locify Loki... Like, who's a good adversary for Loki that isn't a good guy?
Yeah.
Mephisto. He'd be, like, the one guy that Loki would be scared of, right?
Yeah.
Loki, like, if you got Mephisto and Blackheart, like, oh, you could have Blackheart be, like, his Darth Vader. And just have him show up in every episode, and then Mephisto just show up at the end of every credit scene.
Yeah.
That'd be something. Like, the Phase 4, Blackheart is the new Loki.
Okay.
And Mephisto is the new Thanos.
All right.
That would be so bad. So badass.
I don't know what these interdimensional demon like hierarchy is, but I think Dormammu is above them.
I think they're on the same plane. I think they're like in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and they've for understandable reasons not wanted to deal too much into Judeo-Christian themes.
Yeah, because
like,
Mephisto like is literally hell. The devil.
Yeah, he's literally just the devil. Although there is literally also Satan, just like there's Dracula is also canonical. Yeah. Satan has also been a Ghost Rider villain, I do want to point out. So yeah. Satan is a canonical thing within the MCU.
Well, and even thinking of the other movies that they've announced and shows, they're more magic based.
Yeah.
Like even if they aren't directly magic, like Shang-Chi is happening.
Yeah.
And he's a spiritual man and he fights demons and monsters plenty.
Totally. And I mean, I'm sure Iron Fist has probably dealt with that a little bit too. And I mean, fingers crossed. I mean, they got Jessica Jones and the Punisher back, so fingers crossed for Luke.
Well, he's friends with Senior Magico, so yes, he must fight plenty of magical.
It's weird that we bring it up every episode, but every episode so far of WandaVision has been a really significant for what is going to come in the future for Marvel. And that's what a lot of seeing this, so like 30% of all movies these days are Marvel movies. It's not wrong to talk about it. But
and WandaVision's setting a new standard for these superhero shows.
It's just something that's never been done before, and the writers knew that. So they're really challenging not just themselves, but us, like the viewers, to like I said, get past the first two episodes and keep watching it and put the pieces together. It's really interesting. It's like the intro that I just said. Like we're connecting the dots on our WandaVision playsets and seeing if we can find all the clues to figure out what's happening. It's a really engaging, frankly, very enjoyable experience watching WandaVision.
Yeah.
But there was more pleasantries I wanted to talk about. But we're almost to the halfway point, so we got to kind of get it a little quick because there's a lot we wanted to talk about. Is there anything you've been specifically watching?
Yes. I've been rewatching Futurama a lot.
Nice.
I missed most of the later half of Futurama.
Oh, really? But it gets so good after this. After it got canceled and got brought back, it gets so good.
It was canceled like 3 times. So it was. There's constant that. But I decided to do real quick, showing Reba the saddest episodes.
The one with the dog.
No, all of them. All of the saddest ones. I pretty much was like, any episode that directly involves with Fry in back in 1999
his past.
Are, like, sad.
Yeah, you're right. The one with the 7-leaf clover is stupid sad, too. Or the one with Leela's parents. No. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Matt Groening just wanted to do what he couldn't do with The Simpsons, and he wanted to make you really feel something. Yeah. Not that The Simpsons didn't have emotional and very special episodes, but Futurama was able to do that in uncomfortably good
you,
way.
You want to know the one that really made her lose it?
Go ahead. So
full disclosure, everyone, and I'm announcing it here. My girlfriend Reba is pregnant with our first child. So she's
have
very.
Have we not said that on the radio?
We have not said it on the show yet.
Oh, yeah, Bobby Digital. You heard it here first, folks. That is going to be a daddy.
Yeah.
I'm going to be an uncle.
We're
going to
have a baby digital.
A baby digital.
But yes, anyways, so Reba is pregnant right now. So she is kind of emotional. So we're watching an episode where a bunch of other stuff happens, but it ends up being that Fry is able to communicate in his mother's dreams. Like, after the year 2000?
I vaguely remember that one.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole time he just kept being like, I just want to tell her this and that and that I'm okay and all that. But, like, the final moment when she's just like, was this something you wanted to tell me? He just starts crying and hugs her.
Yeah.
And that's when she lost it. Yeah. So bad, she... like, I look at her, I see a single tear coming, and then she's just like, can you grab me a bag? And I grab her bag and she throws up. Like,
oh my
she was
gosh.
That emotional.
Oh no. And then it's like, because the second half after they got canceled, brought back again, canceled, and then brought back again, like, they were just like, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to make everyone miserable. This is our revenge. And like, it is like the last season is like almost every episode, like the one where we find out that Hermes Conrad saved Bender's life because Bender was a defective robot.
Yeah.
But Hermes, a bureaucrat, thought that he deserved a chance at life. Like, oh my god.
Totally.
Like, I was thinking about that one the other day too, but yeah, Futurama's an amazing show. Yeah. And so is Disenchantment.
Disenchantment is good. I'm not caught up on it.
Matt Groening's kind of... You're going to like the new season, but Matt Groening's kind of an asshole, I've heard, but, yeah. Like, I can't... Like, if I had made... changed... Not just cinema, not just television, but society. Mm. Like, when I think about, like, how much the youth of the 90s was changed by The Simpsons. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's unreal to me. And, I mean, all our lives we've been watching The Simpsons. All our lives we've been watching Futurama. We've been watching, and now Disenchantment. And it's wild. Like, Matt Groening started out making a comic strip called Life in Hell that nobody's heard of at this point. But
no.
was funny enough to get him a sketch on the Tracy Ullman show. Like, how crazy is that to think about?
No,
like,
for real. No, it's insane. And I would say, though, Futurama is his magnum opus. Like,
Think so. I think him, and it was all, you can't just give him credit to, because I think it was David X. Cohen as well,
okay.
Who left The Simpsons for the same reason. Like, it was, as I recall, because I have a lot of the seasons of The Simpsons, not all of them, but I have all of them, and they have just tons and tons and tons of commentary and stuff, like, behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it was, like, the third season of The Simpsons. They had a Simpsons private jet. Fox paid for one for the crew and cast of The Simpsons. And the only two people that didn't get on it to fly, to do a test flight around, were Matt Groening and David X. Cohen. Because they thought it was a waste of gas, they thought it was bad for the environment, they hated it. So it's like, these
I
are
guess.
The two guys who really made The Simpsons, because they're ridiculously cynical, like, sardonic, like, assholeness. I don't know how else to describe it. They're both assholes. Like, everything I've seen and heard about them, they're really difficult people to work with. Was like, you know what, we're done with The Simpsons, we're gonna make Futurama, we're gonna make a show that we wanted to make, that's just as, like, just as cynical and condescending as we want it to be.
Right.
And so I do think there's merit to thinking that The Simpsons may be the thing that got them to where they are, but Futurama is what they're proud of.
Yeah.
I do think so. And there are so many Futurama references on The Simpsons that are to the effect of, hey, it's Matt Groening, the creator of Futurama. It's like, I'm glad you liked Futurama. I'm glad anybody liked Futurama. Like,
yeah.
Like, things that indicate that Matt Groening did really, really like Futurama. Like,
oh,
it was his passion project, for sure.
Well, and even all the actors on that, even them, like, I listened to an interview with Billy West, who voices Fry,
yep.
Zoidberg, and Professor Farnsworth.
Zap Brannigan, too.
And Zap Brannigan.
Yeah.
And
he voices more people on the show than anybody.
Yeah.
He voices a lot of characters on that show.
Yeah. But he already said, like, you know, Futurama is very important to him, and that it was probably sustain his career longer than any other show.
And the same way that, the like, in the 90s, Dan Castellaneta did plenty of voice acting,
yeah.
And then suddenly The Simpsons come along, and you don't need any other jobs.
No.
You know, Harry Shearer was a pretty successful comedian. He was in Spinal Tap, and then he doesn't need to work anymore because now he's in The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And Billy West, again, one of the most prolific voice actors ever. He was Stimpy.
Yeah, he was Stimpy, Billy from Billy and Mandy, like...
No, Richard Horvitz is Billy from
Billy
and Mandy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I'm sure he...
He could have done it.
He could have. I'm sure he could have. He was almost Invader Zim, and then Richard Horvitz got that job as well because he couldn't do it because of Futurama. Like, Billy West wanted to go work on Futurama. I
thought I heard that the backstory behind that was that they didn't want Billy West because he was more in demand, therefore
maybe
costs a little more
maybe
than Richard Horvitz.
Billy West is in the I know this is the other thing that I know way too much about, because this was, I think, the first DVDs I ever bought with my own money, was Invader Zim,
of course.
But I do know that the only one that he ever actually did voice work for was the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Which you can still watch, and I'm sure it's available online somewhere. It's very interesting to watch. Richard Horvitz was doing Angry Beavers at the time.
Yes.
So Richard Horvitz was unavailable. But he was on the short list. And then the next one on the list was Billy West. So they got him to do the pilot. And then I'm sure that you're not wrong, because it would have been around the same time that Futurama started. I'm sure he would have been very in demand and very expensive.
Yeah.
Angry Beavers was canceled before the Invader Zim pilot got picked up. So then Richard Horvitz became available, and the rest is history. And
yeah.
I think if you ask either of them, neither of them regrets the decision, because, again, like, Billy West is Fry. He's everybody from Futurama,
yeah.
But he is Fry. Like, that's going to be the thing that's going to be, like, his Mario. That's going to be, like, his Mickey Mouse. That's, like, that's his thing. That's going to be his Homer Simpson, you know?
Yeah,
and Richard Horvitz, I think you could say the same about Invader Zim, but he does a lot of stuff. But I think if you had to pick, like, if I told you Invader Zim's voice was Richard Horvitz, you'd immediately know every other job that he's ever done.
Yeah, because it's all this screamy, like,
high-pitched he's got voice. A very strange voice, but he's very good at it.
And just seems like the nicest guy. But, like, in that interview with Billy West, like, he talked about, like, that one of his greatest fears was being replaceable for any of these shows he worked on. So, for Fry specifically, he was like, that's just my voice.
Yeah.
You can't, like, you can... When I'm doing a voice, a lot of people can replicate that.
Yeah.
But when it is just your natural voice,
yeah, I mean, I could do Professor Farnsworth. Great, excellent news, everyone! And, okay.
So he can't do Professor Farnsworth, but many people can.
I could try, though. I try. I got an A-plus for effort, and everybody will agree with me. Let's try Zap Brannigan. Zap Brannigan, hello. Excellent news. I've made it with a woman. Inform the men. That was my Zap Brannigan. That was your kiff. That was amazing. That was so good. We gotta take a clip from Futurama and revoice those characters. You heard it here. That's my project now.
I'm not a biggest fan of velour as you are, sir.
It's like Matt Groening, if you're listening and you're fed up with Billy West and you need somebody to replace Maurice LaMarche and Billy West as Zap Brannigan.
No one can replace Maurice LaMarche.
No, not
in love that man.
Not in our hearts,
no.
But as Kip Croker, maybe. Anyway.
My gosh. We are over the halfway point.
We're at the halfway point. I did want to mention a couple other things, but I'll make it super,
yeah,
super
so quick.
Disney Plus got The Book of Life, which I just watched actually before I came down here. It's
amazing.
Great.
I love
it's
the
good.
Book of Life.
I do think Coco is better, but I don't think you should compare the two.
No.
And no one should compare those two because they're very different movies and they're so different. Not just visually, but the stories are about two very different things. Book of Life's great.
It is like, yes, there's a lot of parallels because, yes, you're dealing with...
Well, it's about the same
you're
concept.
Dealing with the Day of the Dead, yeah. And the main character wants to be a musician as opposed to following his family's footsteps.
It's like if anybody had made... I mean, The Thief and the Cobbler came out just after Aladdin. But if somebody made, like, another movie about... If somebody made a movie about Sinbad right after somebody made a movie about Aladdin, you'd obviously compare the two, but
didn't
you shouldn't. Oh, yeah, no,
yeah,
they
DreamWorks did.
They absolutely did. I mean, not right after Aladdin, but again, like, people compared it to Aladdin. Like, yeah. They're compared because of the same themes. They shouldn't be. That's my point. That's all I'll say about that. And then Ferdinand is also on Disney+. Have you watched it?
I haven't.
It's actually stupid good.
That's John Cena, right?
It is. It's John Cena. Ferdinand is a children's book written by a Spanish author during the reign of Francisco Franco, who was the fascist dictator of... He was a communist dictator, or maybe just a socialist dictator, but he was a dictator of Spain for years and years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And I do remember that the book was originally banned, and the guy was, like, arrested because people thought that this was, like, anti-war, anti-Franco propaganda. It's about a bull who just doesn't want to fight anybody. So when they bring him to a bullfight, they don't know what to do because he just doesn't want to fight the matador.
Right.
But they made a whole movie around it about this is how we're raised. Like the bulls strive to be the strongest bull because that bull gets the chance to take on the humans and one of these days that bull is gonna beat that human and then live the rest of their lives in peace and harmony and prosperity, and it's never happened. Right. And that's like the reveal at the end is like it's never happened. Like, and this one bull is like, no, I don't wanna do that. I wanna sit here and smell some flowers and just have a happy time. And it's much better than I thought it would be. Of course, like any off-brand Disney movie, like you don't think is going to be great, but it's way better than I thought. But the thing I really wanted to talk about, because I always talk about Attack on Titan, and I might have a new favorite anime.
Really?
Okay, it looks like it's recording.
Hello.
Yeah, we're getting levels. Okay. We are. We just lost so much of that. That's such a shame.
Oh, man, because that was good.
That was so good. No, we lost, like, a good, like, 10 minutes of this-ish. We can't recreate that magic.
No, we can't.
I feel pained that our listeners won't get to experience me opening up a Pokemon card pack.
How long has it been since you've gotten Pokemon cards?
I don't even have an answer for that. It's been so long. That's right? Amazing. My favorite anime, by the way, is The Promised Neverland. So we talked about that a little bit. Promised Neverland is a kids in peril story about a world in which people are being farmed for meat. by these like demons. So we'll get this through this quick because I already explained this to Bobby when the microphone cut out. But it might be my new favorite anime just because the writing is really insane. It really is a thought-provoking anime, and Bobby was interested in checking it out. But the benefit of this is now that we have a little bit more time to talk about the rest of this because we also missed our first little fun news story,
yeah.
Which I'm really upset about because I genuinely experienced, you're going to miss this, I genuinely experienced the joy of childhood when I opened up a pack of Pokemon cards and got a shiny Charmander card. I'm so upset that moment won't be immortalized forever. So maybe explain to the listeners what just transpired.
Yeah, so our first news story of the day was how McDonald's had their Happy Meal deal going on where you go there and you can get a pack of cards as well as like a little activity sheet and stickers in your case.
Yep.
But like also comes with like window frames, drawing sheets, stuff
and,
like that.
And Digital bought me one and as well as his girlfriend because I guess he has to. But it was nice. So we opened one live. Well, I guess not anymore. But we were going to open one while recording, and it just didn't happen because I got a shiny Charmander.
Yeah, he got his favorite Pokemon.
I got my favorite one. It's always been Charmander. Hashtag it's always been Charmander.
Oh, man. I have not seen anyone get a Pikachu, though, so that is interesting.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. That would be, like, the super rare one. You're going to see him, like, on eBay for, like, $2,500 in a year or something.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. And like we were saying, a lot of adults are kind of ruining this by, like, very early on, because I spoil this for you, too. You can go to McDonald's and just ask to buy, like, their toys in bulk.
Which blew my mind, but you're not going to hear that part because, again, the microphone cut out. Yeah. But it is, like, it's mind-blowing, isn't it? Like, adults ruining things for children. Yeah. Great.
Yeah, for real. So, like, the first couple days, that's what was happening with these things. But eventually McDonald's had to step in and be like, no.
Yeah.
You can only get these if you purchase, like, the Happy Meal.
Yeah.
Which has just resulted in a lot of people buying, like, $100 worth of Happy Meals.
So food waste now.
Right, exactly. Because I'm not eating $100 worth of McDonald's no matter how much I like it.
We're in the middle of a pandemic and also the economy. The economy. But come on, guys. Don't be a dick just because you can catch Pokemon. I know you gotta catch them all. They don't mean that literally.
No.
They've never meant that literally. Sorry to ruin it for any 35-year-olds listening right now. You don't literally have to catch every Pokemon.
just so you guys know, in my pack that I opened, I got a holographic Squirtle.
Oh, yeah.
And the one that my
and
girlfriend...
And you got it framed.
And it came with a frame, so... So I put it in there because Squirtle is my favorite.
Because you do, of course. Yeah. If I got a frame in mine, I got stickers, which I will use those stickers. But if I had a frame, I'd frame that Charmander. I would for sure.
Oh, totally. And my girlfriend got a holographic Treecko, which she gave me.
Nice.
Because she has no idea what a Treecko is.
Because that's love. It's yeah.
She has no idea what a Treecko is, but she was happy to take that non-holographic Bulbasaur.
Yeah. Oh. Well, Bulbasaur is the cutest. I get it.
Yeah. But like Yeah, so like I was kind of saying, this is a big year for anniversaries for a ton of video game franchises, and Pokemon doing their 25th, this is one of the things they were doing, as well as like Post Malone and I think Katy Perry, like signing on to do like music shows.
Yeah, I saw Post Malone's update on Facebook. I mean, I suspected that Post Malone was a Pokemon fan because he's about our age.
He's a nerd,
but like, dude... He went all out for. He did like a full like CGI like version of himself as a Pokemon trainer on
Twitter.
Like with tattoos and all. Like, dude, this guy's he looks like a gym leader.
Yeah.
It is surprising how many rap artists dress very much like Pokemon gym leaders. Have you noticed that? I saw Lil X Nas at the Grammys once wearing a completely pink tuxedo and a cowboy hat with a mask, and I'm like, that guy's about to steal Pikachu.
Like, see, you describe him like that, and I'm like, he sounds like he'd be a ghost Pokemon.
Yeah, like a ghost Pokemon trainer out at like an old ghost town or something.
Or now, I guess, fairy.
Maybe.
But other things.
Katy Perry would be a fairy type gym leader for sure.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, you can see that.
Totally. But a few of the other things Pokemon is doing is they partnered with Levi to make a bunch of clothing.
Oh, wow.
Including, you can buy Misty's entire outfit for way more than it's worth.
Oh, wow. Who would do that and where can I get their phone number?
I love it because it's literally Misty's outfit. It's just jean shorts, suspenders, and a yellow tank top.
It's the easiest cosplay.
It is.
I mean, I have seen guys do that cosplay, but it is. It's like that is the cheapest of all cosplays. You can go to any thrift store in America and buy that costume.
Levi's
steal this look.
Levi's is here. They're like, to complete this entire outfit, it's going to cost you about $70. Screw you. I can get that for like $20.
It's like, oh yes, it's the 25th anniversary of Pokemon, so let's make money.
For real.
It just seems like that.
But I mean, we also got Pokemon Snap coming next month.
Yeah.
Which is like...
Oh, it's next month?
Or no, it's April. Sorry.
Oh, it's in April. Okay.
It's April.
That's still a lot sooner than I thought.
Yeah. No, it's so close. Yeah. And... We're going to try and figure out how to stream it.
We can, I mean, I've heard it's very easy on PlayStation 4. Well, we don't, it would be,
it'd
on,
be
the
on
Wii
the Switch.
U. It, the Switch, right. I'm sorry, I don't know any Nintendo consoles. I'm so old.
Well, this next thing might actually convince you to do that then. So Nintendo had a Direct, and part of that involved the new Monster Hunter was announced.
Mm, yeah.
Exclusive for the Switch.
I've been watching, yeah, it's, which they have done before. Like, yeah. Monster Hunter, it's weird because it's Capcom. They've done this weird bounce between PlayStation and Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
It is originally a PlayStation title. It was one of the last PlayStation 2 titles. And then for a very long time, they were only making games for the DS.
Right.
I think they made one game for the Wii, and that was it. So this will be the first Nintendo console Monster Hunter that's come out in a very long time.
Yeah. And I know you love Monster Hunter.
I've
never played it. I've never played it, very long.
It's a little more adult. It's almost like an adult version of Pokemon, except you're not catching the monsters, you're killing them. I'm talking about like the simplicity. It's the same reason I think people like Pokemon. There's lots of different monsters.
Yeah.
They all have different abilities. They all have different strategies to go with them. And you're just catching ones and leveling them up so you can get bigger ones. Well, Monster Hunter is the same thing, except it's hunting the monsters. Like there is a big monster. I will hunt it so I can harvest parts from it to use in bigger weapons so I can hunt bigger monsters. So it's still like a lot of the same tropes that I think people enjoy about Pokemon, people enjoy about Monster Hunter. But the simplicity of the two games is really the selling point of both of them.
Yeah. Well, with that, they are releasing the limited edition console, a Switch.
Ooh!
And I'm like, I'm going to show it to Eric here. Let's see what he thinks about it.
So the Switch is just a thing?
So that's the dock.
Oh.
And those are the Joy-Cons there.
Mm.
And then that's what the back of it looks like.
I mean, how much is it?
It's $370?
$370 is still a lot.
It's still a lot, but I mean...
You've piqued my interest. I won't say you haven't.
And let me double check. It does come with Monster Hunter as well as all the DLC that'll come for it.
Oh, so it's not just the game. It's also the pass. So that is actually... So when you add that up, that's probably like $120 off the price or something to that effect.
I'm like, it's worth it to someone like you who likes Monster Hunter and would
I
get the Switch.
I haven't meaning to get a Switch too. Just for Pokemon Snap, but I mean, for other games too. I mean, I still got to play Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And Animal Crossing.
I still haven't played Breath of the Wild.
Really? You were never a big Legend of Zelda guy.
No, though. I've never cared for Zelda all that much,
which is strange because I was, and I've never really owned a new console for Nintendo.
Yeah, that's taking away from more of my nerd cred. Like, I don't like Zelda that
doesn't
much.
Like Star Wars, doesn't like Zelda. What do you like?
Kingdom Hearts! No.
You do like Kingdom Hearts.
I
so
love
anyway.
Kingdom Hearts.
And Pokemon.
That is
interesting. Thanks for sharing that. But that'll be interesting. I do think you should give the new Monster Hunter a try, just because I feel like they've been adding a lot of stuff that a gamer like you would really appreciate. Like, you can now ride the monsters. You can now have a dog that you can bring into fights with you. There's lots of little stuff. And that's every month. They make the other great thing about the Monster Hunter games is because the fundamental makeup of the game never really changes. Much like Pokemon, all they really got to do is like, oh, we've added this many new monsters. Yep. We've added this many new weapons. We've added this many new locations. Like, and that's really all they have to do. So DLC or as they've most often done, entirely new games, year after year after year, they're able to put out a really quick return for those, you know?
Sure. How are we doing on time?
We're a little before 45, so we've probably got time for two, maybe three more.
All right, let's get into it here. Yeah. So, Wednesday Addams is getting a spin-off, show exclusive to Netflix.
Now, I feel like this has been talked about for a while, or maybe the internet has just wanted this for a while. So maybe Netflix is just answering the internet.
I think they are, because, I remember there being a period when there was, like, no Addams Family stuff going on, the internet was just like, but Wednesday Addams, though, is...
Yeah. Well, I mean, they made that animated movie, and the animated movie wasn't that good. I did watch it. It was charming to a degree, but, I mean, in the way that kids' movies can be unoffensive and charming.
Yeah. Which is not okay when it's the Addams Family,
well,
to be unoffensive.
Whenever a children's movie is a remake of something that, you know, no one who will alive today was watching when they were... which isn't okay. I think the Addams Family came out in, like, the 50s. True. It was based on a comic book from, like, the 30s before that.
But most people our age associate Addams Family with, you know,
the Raul Julia Angelica Houston movies.
Yeah.
Which are in themselves actually remakes of the show from, like, the 60s.
Which is an adaptation of a comic strip.
Which is an adaptation of a comic strip. So, and we also had a very shortly lived animated Addams Family cartoon. For a little while as well. Yeah. I don't know if you remember watching that one. I watched a little bit of it.
Yeah, I'm sure if I saw it, I'd recognize it. But they did that crossover with Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, they did, yeah. But it's so... I'm not against bringing this stuff back. But like you say, when you do that, you're not just making it for the kids. You're also making it for the older people watching as well. So it needs to be of a little bit higher quality. And I just think the Addams Family movie, the most recent one, didn't quite meet that. But they are making another one. They are. And because it was a fairly successful children's movie. Like, again, children's movies don't have to be good to be successful. Yeah, they just have to be the only movie that came out that month to be successful. But even before that, I remember Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones is dating one of the Jonas Brothers, who I don't know. I don't know which one. But I remember they went as Gomez and Morticia once for Halloween. And I just feel like, even around that time, people were already like, Gomez Addams is the perfect man. Like, yeah. Morticia Addams is the perfect woman. And this weird, like, realization that people our age just all kind of realize that, like, these guys are charming. And so I do think there is a market for Addams Family properties right now.
Yeah.
But they gotta be good. But the big news about this Wednesday Addams series for Netflix is, yep, I think, the director.
Yeah. So, Tim Burton, who I don't know if he's ever worked on TV. Like, I don't think he has.
I feel like I should be able to answer that, but I can right now. I don't know.
Everything in here that mentions things he's worked on, they're all his movies. Like, it doesn't mention that he's done TV.
Yeah.
So this is interesting in itself. But yeah, Tim Burton is set to be the director of it, and the executive producers are Alfred Goh and Miles Millar, who were showrunners for shows like Smallville.
Wow.
So, like, very accomplished... like, men are working on this thing.
And the only thing we have so far is a poster trailer for it.
Like, well, they have a description of what the show's going to be about.
Yeah, go for it. I haven't heard it yet.
So, the first season of Wednesday will span 8 episodes and follow Wednesday Addams as she heads off to attend Peculiar Nevermore Academy.
Yeah, it does, based on the image, look like she is much older than she is depicted in the original source material.
Yeah, but I think they're only aiming for, like, maybe high school.
Well, if it's from the showrunners of Smallville... one could suspect that it is around, like, that the, and with the success of Sabrina, like, coming out of the heels of the success of Sabrina, which is done now, right? It's the final season?
Yeah, they just had their final season.
So this makes a lot of sense for Netflix, because I think people are going to want more of that, and I think this is a very logical step, but from a lot of different people.
Mm.
So hopefully it'll be different enough and distinct enough to not get washed up in Sabrina mania, but, I'm interested. I am very interested in watching this.
There is a little more to here. So the show will see Wednesday deal with relationships around school, her psychic abilities, which is new to me.
She's psychic?
I guess. Okay. And mysteries surrounding both a murder in the local town and her parents' own supernatural past.
Yeah. The Addams Family kind of always has been the... do you remember the movie in the 90s? They made a Brady Bunch movie in the 90s. Where the Brady Bunch was like the 70s.
I loved it.
but they were the only ones. Like, outside of their front yard, the rest of the set was like normal 90s LA or whatever.
Yeah, no, I totally remember that.
Well, that's just always been the Addams Family, though. That's been the joy of the Addams Family, is this family that's so completely bizarre compared to their next door neighbors. Like, they could go down the street and freak somebody out. So... I assumed it would be something like that. When you see a show just titled Wednesday about Wednesday Addams. Of course it's going to be about Wednesday out and about in the real world, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't think that's a trope that anyone ever gets really tired of watching. Look at Thor, the first Thor movie, the fish out of water comedy.
That's 100% what it's about, yeah.
It's never not going to be a situation that isn't enjoyable for people to watch, but also isn't able to depict a very, very different and wide array of moral conclusions that you can draw. Like, okay, maybe the obvious one being don't judge other people based on their appearances, but a lot of various other, like, good messages and story points that can be brought up about that.
Yeah.
And again, Tim Burton, I mean, who's really been hit or miss, especially in recently, but this is something so new for him, like you're describing. And also Netflix has a tendency, when you look at Adam Sandler and Dave Chappelle, to just hire a name and then dump money so that they can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
I don't know
if Tim Burton... They trust the artist to make a good product.
Yeah. I don't know if Tim Burton has ever just had, like, the freedom that a lot of creators get with Netflix when Netflix has faith in them, you know?
I mean, I mean you say that, but then, like, you look at his movies and I'm like, I feel like no executive, like, stepped in on a lot of those.
Maybe. I mean, and you look at, like, the prequels for Star Wars are often blamed on the fact that nobody wanted to tell George Lucas no.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if, like, Dark Shadows had the same problem, like, a lot of later Tim Burton movies, you know? Like, just, like, he just wants to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, no one there was, like, you know, this would work better.
Yeah.
Like, no one was like that for, like, that movie. I get that.
So we'll see, but Netflix has a pretty good track record. A pretty hit-and-miss track record by this point, but it's definitely interesting, and it's definitely got a lot of people interested, and I think for good reason. So it'll be fun to check that out.
Yeah. But yeah, it says it's going to be a comedic horror, and that it'll premiere... It does not have a release date yet.
I don't know. Yeah,
or a cast, even.
Tim Burton's the guy to do it, though. I can't think of anyone else who could do a Wednesday Addams series.
But... That franchise is in his wheelhouse. Like, that's totally there.
Yeah.
All right.
Sunken Eyes and Tiny Feet. It's the Addams Family. It's also every Tim Burton movie.
Yeah, you got me there. Okay, so you were, like, weirdly excited for this one when I mentioned it. So, Teen Titans Go.
Yeah, I am really. It's not just Teen Titans Go. It's one very specific new project for Teen Titans Go.
Yeah. So The Night Begins to Shine, which.
Okay. For those who don't know, explain it.
So, for those who don't know, The Night Begins to Shine is is an episode of Teen Titans Go where, like, Cyborg just has a song stuck in his head.
Voiced by Kari Payton. He's very amazing. Very good voice actor.
And the song is called The Night Begins to Shine, and it's just, like, this 80s, like... neon infused,
it's
like,
so
type of thing.
Good.
It's a good song.
It's such a good song. And the whole, like, episode is him, like, explaining to the other Teen Titans why he's so in love with this song.
Yeah.
And then it's, like, intercut with this ridiculous, like, 80s cyberpunk fantasy like desert wasteland world riding on, like, neon-colored unicorns
and shit.
And they all got mullets and denim jackets with the sleeves ripped off.
Yeah,
it's
they're
amazing.
All Mad Max looking. Like,
it's so good!
Oh, like, my gosh, yeah.
It's the one episode of Teen Titans Go that I will unapologetically say is amazing. It's so good.
Oh, my gosh. As much as people crap on Teen Titans Go, like, I think it's hilarious.
You know who doesn't crap on Teen Titans Go? Parents of children, because their kids love it and they think it's funny too. It's a very well-written show, and I won't say that. I'm just saying that I wanted more of Teen Titans before they gave us a spinoff.
No, true. And I agree with that, but also you should watch Teen Titans versus Teen Titans Go.
I should. It's on Hulu. I should watch it.
I
know
it's not on Hulu.
Is it? Oh.
If it's not on Hulu, I have it.
Oh, okay. All right.
You can get
it. I think it is. I'll get back to you.
But I love Teen Titans Go because, like, they'll do these super deep cuts on characters. And, like, it's just like, and this was a normal Tuesday for us.
It's a stupid, intelligently written show. Yeah. It's for what it is. Because there is, I mean, stupid lowbrow comedy still needs to have smart people write it. Otherwise, it'll cross a line into being offensive or not funny, you know?
Yeah, so, exactly.
And Teen Titans Go, I think, does that very well.
Yeah.
And the evidence is just in the people who watch it still, you know?
So, yeah. So, The Night Begins to Shine is... Actually, it's two episodes. So,
it'll only be, like, a two-part, like,
No,
special.
It is having a full-on...
Oh, no.
Okay,
so the original
show.
One was only two episodes.
No, they had the original episode, and then, like, two seasons later, they did
sequel?
A sequel.
Oh, excellent.
called The Night Begins to Shine 2. But, they will be having a full-on spin-off show based in that world.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
And this article itself does say all the Titans are going to be there.
Yeah.
So, eh. But, I mean...
If it was just Cyborg, I'd be fine. I mean, I just, like, I love... I was a kid growing up in the 90s, watching a lot of music videos from the 90s and 80s, right? And so, a lot, like, a weird thing in so many music videos back then, this was the height of MTV, like, a lot of music videos would have these directors, like, you think about, like, John Landis directing Michael Jackson's Thriller, like, there's such a story behind each music video.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, it was the first one for me was I'm Blue by Eiffel 65.
Yeah.
That was the, for those who don't, I mean, everybody knows the song because it's just three words, like, over and
unless
over again.
Unless you're five.
Yeah. But the video is like the band gets abducted by aliens and has to perform for these aliens. And I just remember being a kid, and I'm sure if I rewatched it, I'd hate it so much because it's not what. But as a kid,
the CGI
like.
Is bad in that.
As a kid, like watching it, I was like, I want to know more. Why are these aliens abducting these musicians? What's the story here? What's going on? Like, and there's so many. Like, you look back at like Dead or Alive or Poison or all these other bands, or Meatloaf even, who has a whole video. The video for the song I Would Do Anything for Love is him as a vampire living alone in a mansion. It's like, well, what the heck does that have to do with the song? Like, so as a kid, I was always like watching these very overproduced high production music videos, and like, I would like to see the continuation of the story of this music video setting up, and then never got to do that because it was just one music video. Yeah. So
see, like, you mentioned all this, and then I'm sitting here like, dude, emo music did that all the time.
It is every single music video. You're not wrong. Every single My Chem music video. Like, dude, Gerard Way wrote a comic book series based on his music videos for the Killjoys album.
Yeah.
Like that was just something that was going on in his head. And they made the music videos for that. And it's like, you're not wrong to say that trend continued into the 2000s, well into the 2000s. Yeah. It probably still happens today.
Well, I just think of, like, Fall Out Boy, Thanks for the Memories, where, like, for some reason, they're vampire hunters. And it's like, what the fuck does that have to do with this song?
Yeah. So you get like, it. So I'm not the only one who thinks this. So somebody who writes for Teen Titans Go must think the same thing then, apparently. Because now we're getting it. I don't even remember the song.
But, oh my gosh. So, real quick, before we maybe touch on the last thing here.
Yeah, we got time for one more, so make it quick.
So, in Teen Titans versus Teen Titans Go, there just becomes a portion where they're just crossing any dimension that has other Teen Titans in it.
Yeah. Like Invader Zim after the Florpus, which is also great.
Yeah. And at the very beginning of the movie, like, they made a joke of, like, that's the serious Robin. We can take him seriously, and he's attractive. And then they go to the Young Justice universe, where it is like Nightwing, like Robin, and they're like, "Oh no, that is the serious Robin." And both Starfires are like super like into him.
it'd be funny if it's like, "Hey, who's that? Oh, that's Joseph Gordon-Levitt. We don't need to pay attention to him, and just keep going."
Yeah. Oh my god. And it's great, and they like run into like the Super Friends Teen Titans.
And
the Itty Bitty Titans and all that other stuff.
I feel like I have to watch. That might be my project for when I get home, is to watch Teen Titans first Teen Titans Go.
Yeah, also like in the Teen Titans Go movie, like Slade is freaking great.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's Will Arnett.
Is it Will Arnett?
Yeah, it's
He's doing a lot of voice acting these days. Good for him.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So
yeah, we got time for one more. We're at the 58-minute mark. So, all right. Yeah.
Yep. Let's just real quick. We'll just talk about the Mortal Kombat trailer. Okay?
Nice. This is what I wanted to talk about.
The Mortal Kombat trailer is so good.
I still haven't watched it.
Oh my gosh.
We can talk about two trailers. I think we can have the time because it's the Mortal Kombat trailer and the Cruella trailer both came out, right? Yeah. And I haven't watched either, and you've watched both of them, but I've heard people's reactions to both.
Okay.
And it's been colorful to say the least.
Yeah.
So tell me what you think about this Mortal Kombat trailer. I've seen the images, and I love the image. I love how they look. Love it.
I think everyone looks great. The only thing I'm kind of like about is because, so in the trailer, there's seems to be like a character who's not from the Mortal Kombat games that they're kind of being like, he's got the Mortal Kombat logo, the dragon logo, like burned on his chest, and they're like, he's important.
Possibly a new character.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. I also don't see Johnny Cage in the thing at all, though I thought he was casted.
Well, he's an original character, so I would, but he is also like a ridiculous character, so I can understand why they would want to minimize his role in the movie.
Oh, but there's still like Jax and Sonya are here.
Well, Jax and Sonya are both like cops that were injured. Like Jax got his arms because he was injured in like a by Kano. I think Kano ripped his arms.
Well,
off
in this Sub-Zero did it.
Like, oh, really?
Like, he grabs both his arms and just freezes them and then smashes them.
Dude! Oh, just you describing that, Donnie. Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh, no. Oh.
I don't even, it's not gonna be, I know, part of me knows it's not gonna be good. I'm still gonna watch it because I've never watched Mortal Kombat movies because they're good. No. I watch Mortal Kombat movies because they're violent.
Dude, up until pretty recently, it would be a safe argument to say that the first Mortal Kombat movie is the best video game.
Really, honestly, and even that one they did when we were in college, like, was at the time we thought it was going to be so good. And it was at the time, but it doesn't hold up. Yeah. But, like, yeah, the first Mortal Kombat movie is that just, now it's gotten to that point where it's that awesome, campy, like, Enter the Dragon type, like, over-the-top combat and stuff. And I love it.
Yeah.
I love rewatching the old ones.
The thing that Mortal Kombat always had over any other video fighting game franchise was that their story was always, like, there. And they pushed it hard. But
the story is so self-explanatory. It's just, it's fighting for another dimension. Like, it's great.
If there's the highlight of the entire trailer is Sub-Zero versus Scorpion.
Oh.
Because it always has to be.
Yeah, that's what Mortal Kombat is. I mean, all the other story, get out of here. Sub-Zero and Scorpion need to fight. Yeah.
All other stories, get over here.
Get over here.
But no, there's just a portion where they're just fighting, right? And then Sub-Zero, like,
ice knifes him. Yeah. Ice knifes him?
He ice knifes him, like, a spurt of blood comes into the air, and he freezes it quick. Stabs him again, and then just makes an ice wall and chucks him.
See,
I'm like, that is a fatality, and I love it.
That is what is up, man. Like, that is what I wanted. Okay, we are already in over an hour, so I won't make you go too deep into the Cruella trailer, but what are your first thoughts on it?
I think it looks good. A lot of people are trying to be like, okay, we're doing this thing about sympathizing villains, and I'm like, no.
We're locifying villains.
Yeah, locifying villains. I don't think they are. Yes, she's the protagonist.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean she's a good person.
Sure.
Like, and
some responses that I've heard of this is like, this is Disney's version of the Joker. So, like, the Joker's not the good guy in the Joker.
No.
Nobody can think that. It's a movie where the protagonist is a villain.
Yeah.
So do you think that's a little more true to what seems to be setting up?
And I think so. And I think it's just, like, the color palette and everything kind of makes it feel very Joker-ish.
Oh, right.
But it is like, yeah, it's Cruella, so there's a lot of black and whites. Like,
she literally tried to skin puppies.
Yeah.
You don't need to have a redemption arc for Cruella.
No,
I'm going to say,
no.
I'll
she,
say it.
But, like, of all the, like, Disney villains, besides, like, Maleficent, she is, like, one of the most interesting.
I guess you're right. Like, I think she's one of the ones who has the least explanation before she shows up in 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah.
She's just some rich lady.
And it is, like, I know this movie, like, just went through, like, hell getting done. Because I know very early on, I think Emma Stone, she got sick or broke a leg or something.
It also started filming during the right when the pandemic hit, too, as I recall.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think that was when they were going to try and do it.
Oh, so that was like, there was already a couple miles they had gone before that point.
Yeah, like it was something like before filming, like Emma Stone broke her leg so that she couldn't do it. So then they had to wait, and then, COVID happened, so they had to wait even longer.
Well, I hope good things for this movie, if for no other reason. Emma Stone, we all know Emma Stone. I don't think she has a role that really has just been hers yet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if she can claim, like, who was it? Was it Glenn?
Easy A.
You see what I mean? Like, we all have a bunch of, like, movies that we know her from, or Superbad, or Easy A, or Zombieland, or what have you. But, like, Glenn Close, I think, was the one who did Cruella in the live-action 101
She
Dalmatians.
Is Cruella,
yeah. It was like Glenn Close gets to say she was Cruella.
Yeah.
Like, a character that exists before you did is, I think, if I was an actor, I would be like, I would be thrilled. Like, Jason Momoa, I'm sure, like, we all loved Jason Momoa, even though he was never really in anything good other than Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And then he got to be Aquaman, and now we're all so happy that he just gets to say that he's Aquaman.
No, and I'm totally there with you.
Or I mean, Michael, you could argue Keaton in Batman, too. Like, Michael Keaton was a very successful comedian, and then he gets to be Batman, and now he's Batman for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Like, it is like, yeah, you have these characters who have existed for decades, and then, like, you get to be an actor to portray them at one point, and then it's like, you are someone's favorite version of that.
Yeah.
And that would be so
Heath Ledger and the Joker, and even now Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, Joaquin Phoenix is such an accomplished actor, and now he got to play the Joker. He got to be part of that incredibly exclusive club of people who play the Joker.
Yeah.
And what's more, he got to play the Joker in a version that people really liked. Yeah. That's hard to do.
Like, no, for sure.
It's, I mean, people attack voice actors who aren't Mark Hamill who played the Joker. Like, it is hard to play the Joker in a good way, but we are at the 105 mark here, so we gotta reel it in. We are the Digital Graveyard. We would like to, of course, thank John Wheeler and Sam Dunn for the use of our theme song, Eric Castellanos, the Dapper Skull, for the use of our logo and t-shirts, which you can buy on his Etsy page at the Dapper Skull. We will include some links up on the Facebook page, which is the Digital Graveyard, digital_graveyard on Twitter, and digitalgravecast@gmail.com if you'd like to email us. And we were working on an outro. We think we finally got one. We think we got a good one. Yeah, okay,
don't be a dick. Only buy one Happy Meal.
That's actually better than what we had planned. Well, thank you. Good night.